NYYST. This is New York, Yankee Sports Talk. Swinging for the fences, knock it out the park. This is New York, Yankee Sports Talk. Christian and Chris, of course, SGR. This is New York, Yankee Sports Talk. Call me New York, Yankee Sports Talk. Record rain or shine, grab your shades and umbrellas. NYYST, you're hanging with the fellas.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back. This is episode 543 of the NYYST podcast. We're presented by NYY Underground. I am your host, Christian, alongside my co-host, Chris.
You!
Brought you out of the mothballs here for this
Come on, bro. Come on, bro. I'm back.
Well, the Yankees won a game today about 20 minutes ago. They wrapped up a 4-3 extra inning win against the Toronto Blue Jays. They salvaged the final game of that series up in Toronto. It was a good day for them to decide to win because Boston lost, correct? I didn't check the score after a while, but I know Tampa got swept in Baltimore, so that's a game they were able to pick up there, which is
Boston
great.
Boston is in a rain delay. They're losing 7-3.
And that's really cool that Baltimore decided to get hot, because guess where the Yankees are going next?
Baltimore.
But we talked about this, or at least I did in the last two episodes, is that a lot of the mood of the show depends on when we're recording the show. And even though after the last two shows, the Yankees won a series but lost, it was kind of like a down mood. And it's still going to be kind of a down mood here because, yeah, the Yankees won today, but it's just more of the same from the Yankees as they went through this series against the Blue Jays. The Yankees don't score runs. The Yankees have this incredible starting pitching. We've talked about this, about how this might be the best run of starting pitching that we've ever seen the Yankees have, especially in the Aaron Boone era, and they just can't score enough runs to back up that starting pitching. Today snapped a three-game losing streak for the New York Yankees. In those three games, the Yankees rolled out each one of their three aces. The Yankees starting pitching in those three games allowed a combined 4 earned runs. If I gave you that information and told you, Fried, Cole, Schlittler, 3 in a row, nobody allows more than 2 earned, what do you think the Yankees' record's going to be? Would you ever in a million years go 0-3?
Winning streak. 3-0.
It's just frustrating on a night-in and night-out basis that you know the script of the game. Mm-hmm. The Yankees might get one early or somewhere in the middle of the game, and then you're just praying to Lord Jesus that they somehow hold on to that one run. But more than likely, the starting pitcher is going to slip and give up a run. Or Cole, well, really, the two runs that Cole gave up on Friday, one of them was a play that should have been made out there, and you just that's another
was that
thing
the Grisham
that,
play?
It might have been. I just felt like one of those runs shouldn't have counted because he should have had a play made behind him there. And then you watch them play sloppy baseball over this three game stretch as well, which you just can't do when you don't score runs. You can't not score runs and play sloppy baseball. That play by Luis Garcia Jr. yesterday when he lost his glove and throws the ball away from third base to allow the go-ahead run to score. I don't even know what the hell he's thinking there. It's like these guys come from a different organization, and then you just get stupid once they come here.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's frustrating. I mean, you brought it up in the beginning that this is going to be a little less negative, but that win doesn't change much for me, man. Because we talked about it before we came on air that we wanted to, I wanted to take a little time to focus on, a certain point. It doesn't have to be now in the show, but I'll bring it up now. is how good this team could actually be if they were healthy, if their offense. I mean, even here's where I get frustrated. Okay, even with the guys out that are out, and don't get me wrong, I'm not sitting here saying they should still be a juggernaut of an offense. I get it. But even with the guys out that are out, this offense shouldn't be this bad. Like, there's still times when the worst offense in baseball will get hot for more than one game a month. I mean, this has been, we texted about it the other day, and I couldn't believe it that it was the first game Bednar was available that he didn't have to be used in a winning situation since July 9th. And this was like a couple days ago when they won the 10-5 game. Like, and I'm thinking to myself, and sometimes you say that to yourself, like, you don't really know. It feels like it's been forever, but you don't really know for sure. And then you go back and look, and it's like, no, it's been over a month. It's been over a month that Bednar did not have to be used on a night they won in a game where he was available out of the bullpen. That's insanity. That's tough to do. So my biggest concern is even when this team gets healthy, there's still a lot of issues to be addressed. Yeah, I'm going to take wins when I can get them. Yeah, the pitching has been absolutely incredible, but you got to start looking at this season and saying, are we throwing another season away with this pitching because we couldn't stay healthy, where this team could, you can argue, is one of the best Yankee teams, complete teams that we've seen in a long time, just going to waste.
I was at the game on Wednesday. I know for a fact, like, I wasn't on mushrooms, that I sat there and I witnessed. It wasn't a hallucination. Like, I witnessed it. The Yankees scored 10 runs. So we know that they can do it.
And they went, didn't they go down 3-0 early? Was it?
And they fought back. They were down 3-0 and then 4-1. They actually fought back in that game against Bryce Miller, who I think the only person with a lower whip in the American League than him is Cam Schlittler. So it's not like he was some bag of bones out there. He was actually a really, really good pitcher. And then you thought that maybe that would lead to something. And what did it lead to? 0-1-1. That's the amount of runs the Yankees scored in the next three games. And then they only got to 4 today because the game went into extra innings.
Yep.
And then you sit there and we talk about this all the time, about lineup consistency and believing in hot. And I get it, day game after night game, you want to pull Wells off to put Sanchez in there. Fine, I got to give you that one at least. But why aren't the 9 positions in the lineup still the same? You leave the catcher wherever the catcher was, and the other 8 guys are the same. And then Boone's changing things. So once something works, why do we change it? And then today, he's talking about he's going to shake up the lineup because he's frustrated. He's just tired of watching them not be able to score runs on a daily basis. And what does he do? Elliot Ramos is batting third when the majority of time Elliot Ramos has been here, he's been batting third. And Elliot Ramos came into today with a -9. Yes, I said that correctly. -9 OPS plus as a New York Yankee. Now, granted, he had a double in the first inning today, but then he did pretty much a whole bunch of nothing the rest of the game.
And you hold your breath every time the ball's hit to him in left field.
Jesus, in the 10th inning, if he would have fell down, we both said the same thing, I would have left him in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, grab his passport.
Somebody said this on NJ.com. I forget who said this. I didn't catch the author's name, but it said, did the Yankees just acquire an older version of Jason Dominguez?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we talk about this, and it's really frustrating. And I said this to you, we say a lot behind the scenes. Obviously, we text every single day, every pitch of every game. But it's like, I'm almost mad at us during that trade deadline show we did, that we didn't look more into the Ramos deal, because it's going to sound like we're saying it because he hasn't produced since he came over here. But it really has nothing to do with that. Ramos could be like a good player right now for the Yankees, and I'm still frustrated because there's so many different angles to look at it. Is he that much of an upgrade over Dominguez? That's the first question.
Not really.
Not really, right? And at least with Dominguez, if you're not trading him because he's not really worth much right now, at least he's getting major league at-bats right now. at least he's here, and we know he can get somewhat hot and run into a few. And at least he's here, right? I mean, at the very least. The bigger issue for me, well, the second issue, I won't get to the biggest issue for me. The second issue is who we gave up for him. And we talked about this a lot on that show, where the Yankees aren't willing to give up that extra prospect for X guy. But when you look at the deals between Garcia and Ramos and the guys they gave up, why are we doing that for Ramos at this point? Why are we giving up those pieces for Ramos? Why not build a bigger package with those guys to get a guy who can actually make a difference here? It's not Ramos's fault. It's the GM's fault that we're getting guys who aren't moving the needle. Ramos is not a... Garcia is one thing, and we can argue that Garcia doesn't really have a position here when everyone's healthy, and we can make that argument, but Garcia is a good bat. I really like what I see out of Garcia. He's been fantastic at first base. But Ramos, really, we just... That was the first question of, is he really much different than Dominguez? The answer is no, so why are we giving up those pieces for a guy like Ramos? And that's the second problem. My biggest issue is when this team gets healthy, who's the odd man out? It's not Ramos, obviously, because of who we gave up for him. It's going to be a guy now like Jones, who, has he been great? No. Does he strike out a shit ton? Yeah. You gave me the stat today where he hasn't even hit a ball high in the zone, which is crazy because he does foul a lot of them off when they're high and tight. But I don't want to see Jones go anywhere. I want this kid to keep developing here. I think he's done enough and earned a spot here. I think he's more valuable when you talk about defensively, if anything, and just being another threat in this lineup. Just to end my point, is he not the odd man out when everyone's healthy?
Just based on the fact that he's got options, and I don't know if Ramos does, and plus, you know how Brian Cashman is. He's not going to admit that was a mistake.
But exactly. My point is, even if Ramos has options, because of who they gave up for him, they're not sending him down. And he shouldn't. My biggest point is Jones should not be the odd man out at this point.
No, I don't agree with that either, that he should be. When you peel back the onion of the Elliot Ramos trade, it looks worse and worse as the days go by.
Yes.
When we did the trade deadline show, we said on its own, you bring in a guy that can hit lefty pitching with a 700 OPS. When you can't score runs, it's fine. Okay? You didn't really have an issue with it. But as you move forward day by day, the trade looks worse and worse as the days go on. Now, he didn't hustle in Saturday's game when the Yankees desperately need to get base runners, where if he's hustling, he probably gets to first base. So that aggravates you as a fan. As we said, coming into today, he has not hit. He has a negative 9 OPS plus as a New York Yankee. Then you factor in that you could have been getting similar or better production out of Jason Dominguez when you gave up your fifth-ranked prospect and another highly regarded prospect in Kent to get what is essentially a platoon bat. And then you can peel back the onion even further here and realize that back at the end of April, the Yankees DFA'd Randall Grichuk, right? Now you're going to say, why are you bringing that up? Well, at the time, nobody wanted Randall Grichuk on the New York Yankees. He was atrocious here. The Yankees needed to get Elmer Rodriguez on the roster, so they chose Grichuk. Everybody applauded it, said, yes, this is an aggressive Yankee team. This is a different way of thinking. Well, now maybe if we would have let the Yankees or the Yankees themselves would have exercised a little patience there with Randall Grichuk, there'd be no need for Elliot Ramos, because Randall Grichuk now, since then, has gone to sign with the Chicago White Sox and has a 147 OPS plus with the Chicago White Sox. So now you could have just maybe given Grichuk a little bit more time here and seen what he could have done. And then there's no need to go get Elliot Ramos. And then maybe you could spend those prospects in a different area for maybe somebody that definitively improves the ball club. I'm not trying to make a big deal out of Randall Grichuk, but as you can see, the layers to this, and you sit back and you think about this is where they went and this is where they ended up, it just looks worse by the day. And then when you factor in that Bellinger should be back by the weekend now, Where is Helier Ramos playing? Where is Spencer Jones playing? Okay. And when Aaron Judge comes back, now you can say, oh, well, Ramos will play until Judge gets back. Well, then Judge is here. Now you just spend all this prospect capital on essentially a fourth or fifth outfielder, a platoon bat. How does that make any sense? It's not that Brian Cashman doesn't make trades or does or isn't willing to spend the prospects. It just baffles you on the things that he decides to spend them on. And Elliot Ramos is now a huge head-scratching acquisition for the Yankees, where, yeah, I think you and I were both in the same boat that we were just trying to spin it positively and see how it made sense.
Right-handed at the deadline. Bat, yeah.
Well, now here, as we are 11 days or 13 days past the deadline, it doesn't make any sense. And Cody Bellinger is 5 or 6 days away from returning, and it's going to make even less sense now.
Yeah, I mean, you can almost argue that, you know, there was a lot of theories coming out after the deadline that, you know, Cashman must know one of these guys is definitely not coming back. A lot of people thought it would be Judge. It was, a throwaway of a deadline. You could almost argue now that you'd actually feel better about the trade if he did believe that. But it was almost instantaneously after the deadline that you heard news that all three guys are on the mend. I mean, they're coming back. And I just have a real big problem with it, man. And again, I'll be honest with you. Let's just for argument's sake right now say Ramos has options. Okay? If you think I'm sitting here arguing because of prospects, I'm not. If everyone got healthy and Ramos got sent down or even got DFA'd, would I still say Cashman's a fucking idiot for the capital he gave up? Yeah, but I'd at least respect it, man. My biggest issue is
Elliot Ramos does not have any options left.
We've watched this movie before. It's not a sequel. It's not a prequel. It's the same fucking movie. And that's where I get frustrated. And when you have this kind of underlying narrative now within the season of not just the same movie of how the organization is going to make decisions, but another layer to that is just how they're going to play each game day in and day out. I texted you jokingly earlier. I didn't think I was going to be able to watch a lot of the game today. My plans got changed. But I said, text me when the Yankees are down 1-0 in the seventh inning and Weathers pitched a gem. I mean, it's just been the same thing over and over again. And I'm getting sick of watching the same thing over and over again, man. It's becoming more and more difficult to love this team unconditionally as a fan, and we always say we separate the front office from the players on the field. And it's something that's been fairly easy for me to do over the last decade. But it's getting more and more difficult. I can't sit here and tell you that I love this team unconditionally anymore. I don't know how much more I can take of the same bullshit. And the whole Ramos thing is going to play out right in front of our faces. And Jones is going to be sent down, and he shouldn't be the guy to go. I don't think sending Jones down makes this team better.
Well, when Bellinger gets activated, there's no other move that they can make. They don't have any extra bench pieces to send down. I don't know what you're laughing about.
I'll tell you in a second.
Unless you're going to are you DFAing one of Goldschmidt or Rosario?
No. I'm laughing because I was going to say, and again, we talked about this, well before today. But if you're going to have a manager that's going to expend the entire bench in one inning, like we saw today, we talked about this team taking one less bullpen arm and adding a guy to the bench.
Well, I don't know if they can really afford to do that with the way they're taxing their pitching.
Yeah, but you know what? It's either been... I don't know, man.
Honestly, you know what? You might have wanted, and that's another thing, because Rodon could be activated this week to pitch Tuesday or Wednesday in Baltimore. So at that point, you look at maybe a guy like Hanner. You take that extra arm out of the bullpen. He gets sent down, and then Warren slides into a bullpen role, which we got to talk about. Let's start there first.
Yeah.
And then I want to get into the very curious, and we'll use that word in place of another word that we probably shouldn't say, managing that Aaron Boone did in
yeah. today. Yeah, curious. Curious is definitely politically correct, sure.
So today was the sixth start in his last seven where Ryan Weathers is allowed one run or fewer. So I got to give a lot of credit to Ryan Weathers here. He's definitely turned the season around. You heard Cone talk about it on the broadcast today. He's kind of changed his pitch mix, staying away from the fastball, which he surrendered a lot of home runs on. And I got to give him a lot of credit for being able to kind of push through this, because we all thought that at some point he was going to be choked a little bit because he just didn't pitch a lot last year. And here he is late August looking as good as he's looked all season. So you got to give him a lot of credit there. And the debate was always when Rodon and Cole and Schlittler and Max Fried were all healthy, who's the odd man out, right? And it was always between Warren and Weathers. And my thought process was always, well, it's going to be Weathers because he's got better stuff, which is going to translate better in the bullpen, and eventually you're going to have to watch the innings. Well, now watching the two guys pitch over the last 3 weeks here, I don't know how you can pull Ryan Weathers out of this rotation when it is so hard for the New York Yankees to score runs. You have to look at how you can prevent the most runs, and that's what Ryan Weathers taking the ball every fifth day.
Ryan Weathers has been, I'll apologize for any bad thing I've said, because you can really, how many starts would you say he has left in the season?
How many has he made so far?
This is what we need SGR for. I mean, here's
does
the point.
Does Ryan just go into hibernation on certain days?
Yeah, that's just his thing, man.
And then he'll pop up like Monday afternoon.
Well, he's getting ready for the NFL. Oh. It's Sunday, so. Ryan Weathers, really, he could just be decent the rest of the year, and he's exceeded expectations beyond.
Today was Weathers' 24th start, so what do you say? He's got six or seven left?
Six to seven left, I'd say. He can go out there for six or seven starts and be mediocre. I mean, and you'll still walk away and say, this guy put together a fantastic first full year. Has he had a full season ever?
The most innings he's ever thrown in a season was his rookie year in 2021, was 94.
That's and, 5 years ago.
And today puts him at 120. What's 127 and 7? 134?
Yeah.
Today puts him at 134 innings.
The guy has, I take back anything bad I've said about him. He had some hiccups when he was giving up the long ball. He clearly adjusted. They showed it today during the game that he's throwing his fastball a lot less. He's relying more on his off-speed pitches to get him ahead in counts. And he's using his fastball more as a setup pitch, which is kind of crazy to think about because I think his fastball can be electric, but he gets beat on it a lot when he needs it as a put me over, and he's been utilizing his pitches much different. This guy has been lights out. And he's been so good. We've gotten to a point now where, yeah, the Yankees are in a bit of a pickle, because if we're talking about Warren or Weathers, who translates better into the bullpen, it's no doubt Weathers. I mean, Will Warren is not a bullpen pitcher. He's just not. But you're also now talking about a guy in Rodon who, I mean, how many years has he been here now, man? Is this his fifth season? This is his fourth?
Yeah.
I'm not saying Rodon's been bad. I'm not saying he's been great.
Largely disappointing.
Largely disappointing in this sense. Do you still, after 4 years, can you sit here and confidently just look at Rodon and say, I trust him?
No.
Now, Weathers been here for 1 year, a guy who really hasn't thrown a lot of innings. Do you trust Weathers right now?
It's hard to say that you don't.
My point I'm making is, have you ever felt this strong about Rodon as you do of Weathers right now? I don't know that Rodon has given us a stretch of games this dominant. I'm wrong.
No, you want to know what the difference is because it started so poorly with Rodon. He never built up any trust with the Yankee fan. Where Weathers struggled, but he had some really excellent starts early on in the season where I watched him and said, you know what, this guy's got the stuff to do it. It's just, you know, this is a project here.
Right.
We all knew that when the trade was made, this was a little bit of a project here.
Right.
So when you look at, if the Yankees were in a position where Judge and Stanton and Bellinger were healthy and they were averaging 5 to 6 runs a night and they still had the same bullpen issues that they had, it's a different conversation. Now you could say, well, Warren is built up from pitching a full season last year. They can sustain when he goes out there and gives up 4 runs, 5 runs a game. They can, you know, outslug that. Let him take the rest of the starts. Let's transition Weathers into the bullpen here and get him ready for October. Different conversation. But when you literally cannot score 2 runs a game, you need the guy out there that gives you the best opportunity to not allow 2 runs a game. And that guy is Ryan Weathers.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, as crazy as this sounds, you're basically relying on every single one of your pitchers, 1 through 5, to be your ace.
It's not fair. It really isn't. And, you know, professional sports, and they all big boys, and they all get paid a lot of money. Even a bum makes $600,000 a year, which is more money than you and I will ever see, not in a lifetime, but, you know.
A year.
Annually,
yeah.
Right? But as a competitor, as a man, you got to feel bad for these guys out there every night that, you know, if Gerrit Cole hangs a slider and it's 1-1 and it's 2-1 and he leaves the game down 2-1 in the 7th inning, that he failed. Whereas really any other time, if Gerrit Cole goes out there, gives you 2 runs over 7, strikes out 8, you're saying that's an ace. That's what my ace does. But he leaves the game and you feel like he failed because he gave up 2 runs.
Yeah.
That's not right.
No, no, it's not.
I talked about this on the show that I did on Thursday, Chris, and I texted this to you. 3 times on the Yankees homestand that they just completed, which was their first winning homestand since May 1st to the 7th, they had 3 guys go out there and give up 1 solo home run, and that was the only thing they gave up, and they all left the losing pitcher a record.
Yeah.
How does that how does that happen?
It doesn't happen in real life. And to your point, and to segue into something else here, Let me round out my point of comparing Rodon and how we feel about Weathers. My point was that we're in a predicament now where you don't know how Rodon's going to come back. And I'm telling you right now, based on that, because we don't trust Rodon, because no one does, you have to keep Weathers stretched out, because it's going to be tough to justify not giving him a ball in October when you need 4 starters in a series.
Well, I'll tell you this. A real organization, one that is run with brains, looks at Carlos Rodon when he comes back and says, for the next 6 weeks, he's got to match the energy of the other 4 guys in this rotation.
It's not a it's literally you are not pitching to get us any better. You're literally pitching to earn a spot in October.
Where if he doesn't, then you say to yourself, well, and this only matters if the Yankees get to the ALDS, which right now is no given, which we can both acknowledge that. That when you need a 4th starter, hey, you know what? He came up here. He wasn't as effective as Ryan Weathers. He just doesn't get it because he makes $27 million a year. Ryan Weathers pitched his ass off this year, was here the whole friggin' year. Who gives us a better chance to win?
Oh, smarter Yankees. I mean, that's kind of the point I'm making. And then to segue into the point that you were making of, it's just unfair to the pitcher. So I've been on teams, obviously in college and whatever, where the pitchers have gone out there day in and day out and just pitched their balls off in big games. And the offense just didn't show up. The defense sometimes didn't show up. And it almost becomes like a leader thing. It's almost like a behind the scenes, like Gerrit Cole and maybe Judge get together and they're like, okay, we have to kind of put a rift here. Like, there has to be some accountability held within the team in a dynamic of pitchers versus everyone else. And you saw that, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, I'm just speculating, I don't know shit. But to see Gerrit Cole as animated as I did the other night made it clear to me that he had a talk with his pitchers and you saw Will Warren get animated on the mound.
Which,
and I'm not
by
saying,
the way, I know people had a problem with it because it's Will Warren. I don't know. I didn't have a problem with it.
No, I typically don't like to see my pitchers show up a player, but this is what I'm talking about now. You've never really seen that on the Yankees before. Maybe Stroman, who's a fucking head case, and we always called him out on his bullshit. But other than that, you typically don't see that. And I think that starts from the top, and it kind of solidified my theory when I saw Cole go out there and be animated. Not many people saw it, but he was pissed. He was pissed after that inning, and he came into the dugout watching the iPad, shaking his head. He was fucking angry. And to me, it's gotten to a point where it's like, we're showing up, right? We're doing our job day in and day out. A bad start now for a Yankee pitcher is like 3 runs over 6. A quality start has become a bad start now.
So it's also an automatic loss.
That's what I mean. But that's what I mean. In our minds, it's become a bad start because it's an automatic loss. So I think you're seeing a dynamic, and I actually support it. And you might think that it causes a rift within the clubhouse in a bad way. I don't think it does. I think when you start holding your guys accountable from the other end of the ball within a clubhouse, I think it creates something different. I think that these guys are not showing up anymore just for themselves, just for the fans. They're showing up for their pitchers. And you got to see a change here. I mean, these pitchers, what they're doing is historic. I've never seen anything like this on any team I've ever watched. What they're doing is historic. I don't know if SGR texted it to us, that tweet of what the Yankees pitchers have done. It was just a lot of 6-inning pitch, 7-inning pitch, 1 earned run. This team should be the best team in baseball. They shouldn't just be atop the AL East. They should be the best team in baseball. And I don't know if it's just the injuries. I obviously know, I'm not dumb, that plays a major part of it.
Not an excuse, though.
But it's not an excuse to be this bad when your pitchers are going out there and pitching their fucking balls off every single day.
So when I post what I posted a couple of days ago about how the Yankees are just squandering all this great pitching here, and somebody in the replies is like, well, what do you expect? Judge's out, Stan's out, Bellinger's out. I don't know. I expect these guys to be able to find a way to score 3 runs a game. I don't know. Am I crazy for thinking that the guy still in this lineup can get 3 runs a game? Is that too much to ask for?
Well, that's kind of a great point. It's not like we're asking for 7 runs a game. Give me 3 to 4. The worst lineup in baseball should be able to give me 3 to 4 runs a game.
If the Yankees are able to score 4 runs a game, I don't even have to watch the game. I know they won.
Literally. Which is insanity.
So, just to put a bow on the Warren Weathers debate here, to you, Rodon comes back Tuesday. Let's say that's the plan. That's what we go with. Weathers stays in rotation.
Look, Warren has options left. I don't think he's
You could send him down. You could do
I
that.
Don't think he's you a bullpen piece.
I mean, you could DFA Ryan Yarbrough, who you never really see anymore.
I do, but again,
or Bradley Hanner's a guy you could send down.
But again, you're kind of making my point of, why not have an extra bench piece when there's clearly guys in the bullpen that are never used. And it's mainly because it's a close game whether they're winning or losing, it's been a close game.
Well, you got to make 2 moves to make that happen. You'd have to say Hanner and Warren, or Hanner and Yarbrough, or Yarbrough and whatever, to say, okay, then we'll just bring up, what do you want to do, bring up Oswaldo Cabrera?
No, I'm saying you wait for someone to be healthy.
Well, Bellinger then, I guess?
Yes, that's my point. But anyway, the Yankees, we go back to the Ramos deal, and this is why there's so many different layers to this. They gave up a lot of depth at this trade deadline. Will Warren, to me, going to the bullpen does nothing. He's going to be used in a Yarbrough situation, which hasn't been needed. So to me, I think Will Warren's, the best thing you can do with him is keep him stretched out, send him down, keep him starting, every 5 days, and have him ready to be a guy who we know this team can't stay healthy on either side of the ball. Have him continue to be a depth piece. He's not going to give me anything out of the bullpen. Now, Ryan Weathers, the argument there was his stuff could translate very well out of the bullpen. Will Warren is not a bullpen guy to me. So the best thing you can do with him is send him down. Is it truly fair, as much as I've ripped on Will Warren, is it really fair to him? I mean, look, we can't argue that Will Warren isn't a great fourth, fifth guy in a normal rotation, right? I know I fuck with you and I tell you that you're an idiot and I hate Will Warren, but that's just me trying to trigger you. In realistic terms, any team would die for a Will Warren at the back end of their rotation. That's just the truth. This team can't afford it. They just can't. It's not necessarily fair to Will Warren to send him down, but I think that it keeps him in a position to still be effective and valuable for this team.
So let's move on here to the very curious top of the seventh inning that Aaron Boone had, because I think this is a big takeaway from today's game here. The Yankees did win, okay? They needed this win. They were able to pick up a game on the Rays. The Yankees could have really made a huge dent in the Rays' lead this weekend because they got swept in Baltimore. There's no reason why the way these games played out, if the Yankees had any semblance of offense, you couldn't expect the Yankees to sweep the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yep.
But this is where we're at here. It's 1-1, top of the seventh inning. One out, Lombard with the double. Now you got two lefties coming up in McMahon and Wells. And you text me, how are they going to screw this up? And I texted you what I thought McMahon was going to do, because not a thought in my mind was there that they were going to go to a righty in that situation, because John Schneider, as much of a kind of a dickhead that he is, he's a very good baseball manager.
He is. He's a very good baseball guy.
Is not going to let the right-hander with a base open swing the bat. So Aaron Boone, in his infinite wisdom there, said, I would rather burn Paul Goldschmidt here than try and see what I get out of Ryan McMahon. Now, it almost kind of did work, because then he pinch hit for Wells. Rosario ripped one. It was 102 miles off the bat. A little unlucky there that he didn't get it a little bit more over into the gap. It got flagged down, whatever. But I'm saying to myself, and you said the same thing, you burned your entire bench to get Ahmed Rosario an at-bat, because Paul Goldschmidt was never swinging the bat in that situation. So you made your defense worse by burning Paul Goldschmidt. You made your defense worse, and then you left yourself with no options late in the game, because the only guy, after he did that little skinamarink there, the only thing he had left on the bench was Ollie Sanchez, who he had to bring in because he pinched it for Wells. And then we saw it come to roost in the ninth inning when Ben Rice makes an error, where at that point, with Garcia DHing, if you don't burn Paul Goldschmidt, okay, then Goldie can come in, better defensive first baseman. And then I don't really know what the thought process there was throwing that curveball in that situation. It was called a wild pitch. It's got to get blocked.
I completely ignore the bullshit metrics. You're more in tune with it because you're on social media more, even at an older age.
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
I'm just saying, like, I'm younger. It should be me on social media more, but you're more in tune. Is Ali Sanchez, like, from what I've heard, people think he's a good defensive major league catcher. Am I wrong in saying he just looks lost? Like, Sanchez looks fucking terrible to me.
Hold on. This is an update from the Cody Bellinger situation. Aaron Boone said that he misspoke earlier and that Bellinger is actually expected to begin the rehab assignment at the end of next week.
Week? Like, meaning this week coming up?
Yes. As opposed to being activated at the end of the week. He's starting the rehab at the end of the week. Boone said that he jumped the gun on making that comment.
There's something weird about this to me. There's something weird about it. Bellinger looks fine to me.
Stan looks fine.
Yeah, there's something weird going on, man. I don't know. A lot of it could have to do with Ramos in that trade, man. A lot of it could have to do with the Yankees don't know what they're going to do. Anyway, instead of speculating, let's go back to Sanchez. Does he just look lost behind the plate to you? Or is it just me? Maybe I haven't been in tune enough.
I don't know. I don't know. I said that at the very least, I would have liked a better backup catcher because I don't think Ollie Sanchez belongs on a major league roster.
But the argument to him being on a major league roster, from what I've heard, from guys like Jack Curry, who I respect, has been that he's a great defensive catcher. How
he's not
do
as
you
good as Austin Wells?
How do you not block that ball? That's not a hard ball to block. How do you not keep that ball in front? And then immediately the Yankees pay for it because other teams, as bad as Toronto's been, they still get the situational sack fly there.
And you know how, because he didn't, and this is how people that think baseball is boring and don't understand the game don't understand how everything is interconnected.
Right. Exactly.
Because Sanchez couldn't block the curveball and set up the winning run at second, tying run at third. Then Bednar felt no confidence at all to throw a pitch low in the zone to get Clement to chase down there. So what did he do? He threw a high fastball that Clement was able to get on top of and drive deep enough to the outfield to score the tying run.
Well, there's another layer to that, too, as a pitcher. Once the runners move up, there's no double play intact. I mean, Bednar is, before that pass ball, is going for the double play. Now your goal is to either strike the guy out, obviously, so he's trying to get one by him high in the zone, or to get it high enough where he swings and it's a pop-up to the infield. So you really take away Bednar's strength at that point completely. And yeah, it's a wild pitch, and maybe we can go back and say Bednar's got to be a little bit better there. But ultimately, man,
sometimes things get scored a certain way, but plays can be made.
Yeah, when you're, again, it all goes back to whether this is fair or not. It all goes back to the fact that the Yankees are a team that does not score runs, and their pitching has been dominant. You have to do everything you can. I don't care if Sanchez literally falls on the ball. You cannot let that ball get past you there. It wasn't egregious enough of a pitch to let that ball get to the backstop.
I mean, you look at certain situations in this game here where you have to play clean baseball in order to win a game. The Yankees don't do that. And even clean baseball is choosing when you use your challenges. Because Ramos gets the double in the first inning. A clear ball on an a clear strike on the first pitch of the at-bat. Clear strike. Grisham challenges it, loses a challenge four batters into the game.
And then he couldn't challenge the clear ball.
And then it's 1-1, complete flip the entire at-bat there. He, on a clear ball, doesn't challenge because he doesn't want to risk losing both challenges in the first inning. And that is what we talk about when you got to play clean baseball. That all goes into it. Use your brain a little bit. And then you get the leadoff walk there later in the game. What was it, like the third or fourth inning? I don't remember off the top of my head. You get the leadoff walk with Cabbie. Rice is up 2-0 in the count. That is the hitter's count, meaning if it's not perfect, leave it alone. This ball is barely in the strike zone, and he hits it 60 feet in front of the plate. You have to be smarter in that situation there. This is such a low IQ baseball team where it just – that's the, it's not even that they don't hit. They don't play clean baseball. They don't make smart plays. The manager is a doofus.
They don't know how to run the bases.
It's just – it just all doesn't add up to winning championships.
So – if you really break this down, and we always go back to the organizational philosophy of everything, I think the best point to bring up would be A-Rod had a really good interview on The Fan that I heard recently. And he talked about, I think it was on The Fan, it might have been one of his shows on Fox, I don't know. He talked about, and this is always how I've been, you know, taking lessons my entire life, look fastball, adjust to the off speed. That's always been something that I was taught. And clearly A-Rod was taught. He talks about it. Nowadays, hitters are not taught that anymore. And if you ever want to refer to a team to exploit that, it's the New York Yankees. To your point, with a 2-0 count, not only, especially with, you said there was a runner on, right? That was the leadoff walk?
Yeah.
When you're in a 2-0 count with a runner on, look, baseball is all about putting pressure on the other team. Make them be the ones that have to be perfect. When they walk the leadoff guy and you're up 2-0 and you're a dangerous hitter on top of it all, not only are you looking for a certain pitch, you're looking for a certain location too. And if you're not seeing that perfect, you're taking the pitch. Make him beat you. Don't beat yourself. You don't see that with anyone in this lineup. You just don't. The only guy who you might see it with is Aaron Judge, because Aaron Judge is so good that anything in the zone, you're probably getting beat regardless.
I apologize. I said he hit it 60 feet. No, that was the exit velocity. The ball literally went 1 foot in front of home plate.
Perfect.
I mean, you just look, Ben Rice did not have a good game today up until that point.
He's been miserable.
He atoned in a big way.
He did. Gotta respect him for it.
And I think one of the last things we should touch on here is Ben Rice, and that how he's had this precipitous drop off here. I think even with the home run, he's like 5 for his last 45 or something like that. And people are looking for reasons why it's happening. Well, I think he's regressing hard to the mean here. I think, and I've been saying this for a long time, even before the season started, I truly believe in that Ben Rice is a legitimate 35 home run bat. He's got the power, is real. He's not a 280, 290 hitter like he was in the beginning of the season. He's closer to a 240, 250 hitter. So when you're hitting nearly 300 the entire year, and then now you're hitting 250, you're regressing hard to the mean here. Okay, that's what's happening. So he's more enlightened. If I told you at the beginning of the year Ben Rice was going to hit 250 with 33 home runs and 80 runs batted in, would you sign for it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what he's done so far this year.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's had a little bit better of a season than I anticipated him having, but he is regressing to who I thought he was. And that's not saying there's not a place in this Yankee lineup for Ben Rice. Of course you find a spot for a guy that's going to hit 35 home runs and come close to hitting, driving in 100 runs. Of course, there's no one saying that Ben Rice doesn't belong as a Yankee or isn't a legitimate Major League Baseball player, but he was playing like an MVP candidate in the first half of the year, and he's not really that guy, even though, you know, sometimes we say things reactionary, and a lot of content creation, especially when you're covering a baseball team, is reacting to things as you watch them. Well, that's not who he is, and that's, I think we can say that now. And if we were saying something differently earlier in the season, you know, sometimes we're wrong, but a lot more times we're right.
Okay? Yeah, well, look, I think the whole Ben Rice situation is as simple as this, and I hope I can articulate this. Aaron Judge, you can throw into any lineup, and he is so unbelievably good and talented that it doesn't matter. Aaron Judge is the bar, right? When it comes to Aaron Judge in a vacuum, it doesn't matter who's around him, who's before him, who's after him. Aaron Judge is so unbelievably talented in a way that we've never seen in our lifetime, that he's just going to get up there and be Aaron Judge, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Okay. So, when Ben Rice is in a lineup with Aaron Judge, like we've seen, Ben Rice can, I wouldn't say go toe-to-toe with Aaron Judge, but his game is elevated to a point where we thought we were going to have a really fun summer watching these guys hit balls over the fence and really feed off each other. The truth is, Aaron Judge doesn't feed off anyone. Aaron Judge is self-sufficient. He can do everything on his own. If anything, he makes the lineup better and guys are going to feed off of him. And with a guy like Aaron Judge out of this lineup, a guy like Giancarlo Stanton out of this lineup, a guy like Bellinger now out of this lineup, Ben Rice isn't as good as he might have been on paper to start this year with all those guys around him. He's a lot easier to figure out. And that's not a knock on Ben Rice. That's most players. What we see in a guy like Aaron Judge is not normal. And so I think we were all wrong to sit here and be so high on Ben Rice. Rightfully so. I mean, he was so good. But when you take out all of that, and now the lineup revolves around Ben Rice, he's not that player. And he's been easily exposed in a really bad way where you're right. Regressing to the mean is the best way to put it. And it was expedited based on the fact that everyone around him went down. And so you can't really... Ben Rice has shown me two things. One, he can be a really great baseball player, and we all know that. And even what he's doing now, if the season ended today, you're signing up for it any day of the week. But he's not good enough to sustain a lineup by himself. He's just not. He's going to be figured out.
No, he's not the wheel. He's a cog in it.
He's a cog in it, and that's fine. That's most guys, man. That is most guys. That's how valuable a guy like Aaron Judge is, being in this lineup. And we talk about depth, right? We always talk on this show about how Giancarlo Stanton, while he might, even when he's healthy, be a guy who strikes out five times a game for 2 weeks straight, when a pitcher sees Giancarlo Stanton's name in a lineup, it does something. It changes the dynamic of how he approaches other hitters. When you see Giancarlo Stanton coming up fifth or sixth, and now you're pitching to a Ben Rice hitting second or third, you're pitching to him differently because you can't afford to have runners on base. Because whether Giancarlo Stanton's on an 0 for 20 run with 20 strikeouts, you still have to be weary of him when he steps up to the plate. There's no one to be scared of in this lineup. And Ben Rice can be easily exposed when no one else is around him.
Well, there's a couple things at play here. It's always don't let Aaron Judge beat you. So if you're not trying to let Aaron Judge beat you, you got to pitch Ben Rice differently.
It starts there, right?
It's baseball 101.
It starts there.
You have to have the simplest baseline knowledge of baseball to know that's how that works. Mm-hmm. So that's why he was a lot hotter also in the beginning of the season. He had that protection in the lineup. Also, the entire lineup is pressing right now. I don't care what anybody says. Everybody that has a bat in their hand is friggin' pressing. And Ben Rice, because of the season that he had, I think he's putting a lot more pressure on himself than the other guys are. And you're seeing the results or lack thereof at the plate here because he was an all-star. He was a guy who was helping carry the team in the first half of the season. And I think he feels some of that responsibility, and good for Ben Rice that he does. I'd rather him feel that than be like, shit, whatever happens, happens here. And also, you and I have talked about this. I don't know why no one's brought this up on their broadcast. Maybe I'm not seeing what I think I'm seeing. I think his front hip is leaking.
Oh, it's bad. It's not. Oh, man. It goes back to the approach at the plate of what kind of you're talking about, of how you're not looking for a pitch you want 2-0. Things like that, mindsets like that, if you're sitting there saying, I'm waiting for a fastball inside here and anything else, I'm not. That's part of why his front hip's leaking.
He's flailing. He's not staying in, which you see him hit some of these lazy fly balls to center field where if the hip stays in, he's pulling those out of the ballpark.
Easily.
So it's a mechanical flaw with a little bit of a mental thing going on, and he's got no protection from Aaron Judge. So you combine all that, you get 4 for 45 or whatever it is.
You get doomsday. You get doomsday, man.
And where is the hitting coach?
Yeah. I had someone on my...
I'm some dipshit with a podcast sitting on his couch watching this. You mean to tell me James Rousen and Casey Dillon or whoever whoever it is the assistant hitting coach is now, I don't even know, doesn't see it too? Or how about the fucking manager, for Christ's sake?
Yeah, no, he's leaking bad. And again, I think that goes to approach. When you see a front hip leaking like that, that's an approach problem. That's, you know, obviously a mechanical problem, but that changes psychologically with your approach at the plate. But just one last thing I want to touch on, and it's something you brought up after the 10-run game where you kind of want to feed off that and then lineups are changed. I think an even deeper flaw is if you really break down that 10-run game, Christian, what did you see different about that game in those moments where they were scoring runs that has been different than anything else you've seen over this stretch of 2 to 3 runs a game?
I'll be honest, it's hard to pay attention.
I know it is when you're there.
I noticed in some of those at bats, like the biggest at bat of the game was down 4-1, and Spencer Jones had an incredible AB and laced the ball down the left field line. That was the biggest at bat.
Correct. And that would be what? That would be where on the field compared
well,
to.
That was an oppo hit.
Okay, right. And then I forget who was next. I think it was McMahon had the next big hit. And correct me if I'm wrong, but where was that?
Well, McMahon never seems to pull anything.
So that was opposite field. And then Trent Grisham really was the icing on the cake, I believe.
But he pulled his home run.
No. I'm not talking about his home run. I'm talking about the one that went through the shortstop and third base.
Was that in a different game? That was in the first game that he hit. McMahon and Grisham hit the balls through the shortstop hole in the first game of that series.
I think you're wrong, man.
I know I'm right about that one.
Well,
the game that Weathers.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm thinking about Jazz. Jazz did pull the ball, but the way the field was positioned, he had to try and pull it to get the runner over to third, and it ended up being a base hit. And I thought to myself for a second, I said, this is what situational hitting looks like. And you can go back, and I'll go back after this podcast and just check. I'm almost positive Trent had a ball opposite field that game too, in the 10-5 game. And I just thought to myself, sometimes, especially when you're pressing, less is more. Stop trying to crush the fucking ball. Just go up there. You know what I always respected Rizzo for? With two strikes, you saw the guy choke up on his bat and just try to put the ball in play. And it felt like, even if it were just for one inning, the Yankees were kind of figuring that out. And then it just disappears.
That's usually a strength of Bellinger's game, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Belly's the same way. But to me, it's like it just disappears. And we talk about this approach and where's the hitting coach and where's the manager? Sometimes it's more than just the individual player. Sometimes it's going, look at what we just did and how we did it. Sometimes less is more, man. Take the pressure off yourself. Stop trying to. How many times do we see Jazz Chisholm and it frustrates us to no end? Get up there and try and hit the ball 500 feet when all he needs to do is either pull the ball and get the runner over or push the ball in between short and third. And he's got this long swing trying to hit the ball 500 feet.
It's incredibly racist that you would say that.
Yeah, sorry. Honestly, man, I just don't understand where. It's almost like they just don't believe in it. And it's almost like we know this already. That they are too stubborn to do it. So someone has to do it within this clubhouse. That they need to start feeding off of what they're seeing in front of them. And what they're doing now, I don't care who's hurt, is not going to work. It is not sustainable. And I swear to God, man, if they take this pitching into October and it continues to be this dominant and they still can't score runs, we are going to look back at this season and say, out of all the heartbreak, this might have been the worst, because I don't think the Yankees have ever had, and I'll say this confidently, have ever had a pitching staff this dominant in my life.
No, I don't think they have either, but... The last thing we'll say here for this episode is that when Boone said he was shaking up the lineup, the big thing that you noticed, some guys were in different spots, like Ben Rice leading off, Garcia too, is that Jazz against a right-hander was on the bench today. And he was on the bench today for Jose Caballero. And the Yankees, if they played clean baseball in the ninth inning, the offensive hero of the game would have been Jose Caballero. He scored the first run and he knocked in the second run. Okay. Now, they talked about this during the game today. Is that Boone was asked, is this like a permanent thing? He's like, no, I fully expect Jazz to be back out there on Tuesday. I'm just trying to switch things up today. Well, you look at the way the game played out today. I don't know how you can do anything other than put Jose Caballero back at second base on Tuesday evening in Baltimore. Now you could say, well, play him at third. No, I don't want to play him at third base. I want Ryan McMahon to play third base, okay? The Yankees cannot allow runs to score. You cannot play a weaker defense because you want to get Jazz and Caballero in there. If Caballero goes 0-4 today and they lose, okay, put Jazz back out there. But they would have won on the offensive side of the ball today due to what Jose Caballero did. So taking him out of the lineup on Tuesday would be stupid.
Yeah, and I think just on its own, I think Ryan McMahon deserves his flowers a little bit. we've always said since they brought him over here, if you're going to play the defense you play and you're going to be decent at the plate, I'm going to take it. I'm going to sign up for it. And we're in a situation now where this lineup is fucking terrible. And I'm still sitting here going, I want McMahon in the lineup every day. I mean, didn't you say it to me? Weren't you the one who questioned who had the highest war?
It was like last week over extended period of time, Ryan.
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't great. I mean, it's not saying much. The bar is pretty low. But in a vacuum here, based on what you're looking for out of Ryan McMahon, he's done everything that you want him to do. He's had much better at bats. He has been a brick wall at third base.
Well, and that's the thing.
When you have a guy like him and now Lombard over there on the left side of the field, how can you opt for anyone other than the two of them for an entire game?
When you know if your starting pitcher allows two runs, the probability of you losing is probably around 95% right now.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm exaggerating.
No.
That if you have a left side of the infield that is basically going to suck everything up that gets hit to them, why would you change that? It's not like you have a guy sitting on the bench that has 30 home run potential that you could say, okay, I got to play him over Ryan McMahon. That's not what we're saying because Jazz Chisholm does have 30 home run potential, but he's been objectively awful this year.
Objectively, yeah. And if you want to go even deeper than that, based on what he's done this season, I think having Jazz off the bench and coming in to pinch run, again, is it ideal? No. You want Jazz Chisholm to be a guy who goes out there and hits 30 home runs and puts the ball in play and whatever, but he's not that right now. And you have a guy in Caballero who can do some damage. Having him off the bench to come in, and even though he's a moron, just like the rest of them running the bases, he's still, I mean...
What was John Sterling's famous quote? They run the bases like a bunch of drunks?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, again, you want me to knock McMahon for a second? He's killing me on the bases lately. They all do. They all... Dominguez, when he was up here, doesn't know how to slide. Who had a terrible... Was it Grisham into second base the other night?
Yeah, on Thursday, popped off.
These are the... We talk about fundamentals, right? These are beyond fundamentals. I mean, these are things that at a young age you're being taught. What are we doing? This team, we talk about what they can't afford. A main thing of what they can't afford is giving up outs on the base paths, and they do it multiple, not just once a game. They do it multiple times a game, every single game. So when you combine, it's like the worst formula you could ever have to think you're going to have a winning team. And it's part of why I say I'm not fully confident when everyone's healthy, they come back. But just going back to Jazz for a second, at this point in time, he's more valuable off the bench to me. Why not play Cabby there? Why not keep McMahon at third? If you're the Yankees, what's your reason other than we paid this guy to be here? We traded for this guy to be here. We're paying him to be here to be our starting second baseman, and we're going to be stubborn and keep throwing him out there until he does it.
All right, quick hitter here, and then we'll look ahead to Baltimore. Worst walk year for a Yankee second baseman, Gleyber Torres or Jazz Chisholm?
I got to go Jazz.
Oh, this is so bad.
Well, because here's why. When did Gleyber, what did he hit, 38 home runs?
Yeah, but that was juice ball year.
No, I understand that, but what year was that?
19.
And what was his walk year? 24? So, if you had Gleyber doing that in 23, and then his walk year was 24, and it was that big of a drop-off, I'd say you can argue Gleyber here. But Jazz Chisholm, man, when you take in everything, what he did last year, and then what he told you he was going to do this year, and what he's actually done... Jazz takes the crown.
Oh, for sure. By far, and all the yapping he did in the offseason adds to this. But think about where the Yankees would be right now if Jazz Chisholm posted this line. because this is what Glaber did in his final season with the Yankees. 257, 330 on base, 745 OPS, 102 OPS plus.
What's Jazz's OPS plus right now?
It's under 100.
It's got to be. It's got to be in the 80s.
No, it wasn't that low last time I looked.
Really? And I want to look up two before we go.
It's It's 89 now.
There you go.
So tell me that you wouldn't sign for what Glaber did in 24 if Jazz did the same.
Absolutely would. He also had two home runs, eight RBIs, 10 runs scored, 241 batting average in the 2024 postseason. I mean, is it great? No. But Glaber was also a guy I liked in October. He kind of rose to the occasion.
No, he did. And he was one of the more consistent hitters in that run there in 2024. But what the Yankees need more than anything is some consistent offense. And usually they do get it in Camden Yards. So we'll see what happens here over the course of the next 3 days. Everybody right now is listed as TBD for the Orioles.
Nice.
And they're all 6:35 starts for this three-game set Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in Camden Yards before the Yankees return home to play the Blue Jays, which is the third time this year that the Yankees have played a team twice in three series.
Yeah. We've talked about how awful this schedule has been.
But the lineup for the Yankees is Warren, which is not really set in stone right now. Could be Carlos Rodon. Could be a piggyback situation. We'll wait and see here because the Yankees have not officially ruled anything out regarding Rodon on Tuesday. But then Fried and Cole to wrap up the series in Baltimore. So Baltimore playing a little bit better baseball, sweeping the Rays over the weekend. You look at the standings here, and the Yankees are now six out in the loss column. Boston still in a rain delay, losing big though, down two. And then in the wild card here, the Yankees hold, again, that two-game lead for the first wild card and eight overall over Texas and Baltimore, who are tied at 61-63 for that final wild card, which is astounding that if the season ended today, the American League is getting in a team under 500, which just frustrates you to no end that the Yankees legitimately have a chance to honestly cakewalk to the World Series if they could score runs.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see what happens here. And what's hopefully happening is you hitting the subscribe button here on the very podcast platform that you're listening to us on right now. As we move forward here through the end of the season here and the final season of NYYST, which a little bit of an announcement here. We will be scheduling more shows. There will be more NYYST as the season progresses here. So as we would have only had three more scheduled shows throughout the course of the rest of the regular season here, there will be more. I will sit down and look at the calendar and see what we're going to be doing. But unfortunately, things have not worked out as we had hoped over on NYY Underground, although we're still hopeful to be hope to be a part of the things over there right now. And we still want you to subscribe over there on YouTube and support Pete doing game season live. Some news will come out about that eventually, but one thing's loss is our gain here. So you get more of us as the season progresses here. And please tell everybody NYYST is still the official Yankee podcast of Odyssey. We want to thank you guys so much for your continued support of the show. This has been episode 543. Chris, say goodbye.